About the status of non-observant Jews in our time, and it's a complicated sugya. I'm not saying we're going to finish it today, and we go back to the original sources, which you'll see on page 1, the sugya in Avodah Zarah, that deals with what's called Minim, Mumrim, Apikarsim. These are all sorts of Jews who unfortunately deny the fundamentals of our belief. In some cases, they violate the Torah flagrantly, publicly, and in lahachis, deliberately, not for the sake of not because they are addicted to a certain kind of pleasure, but simply lahachis. And that's called, in the Gemara's language, Mumar Ochel Nevelis Lahachis. And the Gemara says about these individuals something very harsh, and that is Moridin. Moridin means we could put them down into a deep well without a ladder to get up. And if they're stuck in there, we could take the ladder away. And this sugya in Avodah Zarah basically views a mumar, again in the case of lahachis, as someone who deserves to die. Now normally, in Beis Din, if a Jew is accused of a capital crime, then he has to be brought for trial, and we need witnesses to testify against him. And the question I want to raise with you is, number one, how do we paskin la halacha in terms of mumrim and minim? And number two, how do we judge and determine that Ploni Almoni is in fact to be categorized as a min or a mumar? So there are two Rambams, maybe even three Rambams, that we want to look at. The first is in Hilchas Rotzeach, Perek Dalid, Halacha Yud. And the Rambam writes, Haminim Vehem Ovdei Avodah Zarah Yisrael. So these are Jewish idolaters. O Ha'osa Averos Lahachis. He takes a particular Avera, and not out of a sense of pleasure, or he's not motivated simply because he has no other way of enjoying this pleasure, but he's Ochel Nevela, or Love Shatnez Lahachis, just deliberately, to flagrantly violate the Torah, he is also considered a min. So we have two categories of a min. Number one is an Oved Avodas Kochavim, and number two, he's Oseh Lahachis. Then the Rambam goes on and adds another category here, the Apikarsim, Hein Shekofrim B'Torah U'B'Nevua MiYisrael. That's a Jew that denies the Torah. Now, it says U'B'Nevua. I would read it as O'B'Nevua, meaning even someone who accepts the Torah, but he denies Nevua, because the Rambam has, as you know, in his introduction to the last parak of Sanhedrin, of Chelek, he has Yud Gimel Ikri Hadas, and amongst them is the belief in Nevuah. Okay, let's decide that there are these two categories, Minim and Apikarsim. Fine. Says the Rambam, Mitzvah Lahargam. Now, who is obligated to put them to death? It doesn't sound like he's addressing himself to Bezna Gadol, you know, of 23 judges. Because look at the next line. He says, "Im yesh biyado koach lahargam b'sayif b'farhesya hargik." Now, once the Rambam adds the word b'farhesya, what does that sound like? We're going to have this in a few weeks in the parasha.
Pinchas,
right? It sounds like Pinchas. This sounds like the halacha of kanoim pogimbo, because the Rambam wants. He wants this individual to be put to death publicly. Ketzad. Now, the Rambam goes on and says the following. Im lav let's say he doesn't have the ability to actually kill this person by cutting his head off. So what does he do? Yavo aleim ba'alilos, and she is saviv harigosam. He puts forth some sort of deceitful statement, and he deliberately deceives this person until he's able to cause his death. Ketzad, he says he fell into a be'er, and there's a ladder that would allow this guy, this apikoros, to get out of the bar. So he takes the eye of the sulam, and he says to the guy in the bar, "Look, I need this ladder desperately because my son is stuck on a roof, and I'll bring it back to you." Of course, he never brings back the ladder to him. Now, all this refers to Yisrael. The Rambam then goes on to say, "Aval agoyim ein beinam uveinam she'ein beinenu beinam milchama." We're not at battle against a particular group of non-Jews. Or, for example, Roe Behema Daka Yisrael, with regard to those shepherds, Jewish shepherds who take care of the small sheep, we don't assume that they're necessarily Mu'adim Ligzela, meaning they don't take the sheep and graze them in other people's pastures. Is in all these cases, Ein Misavim Lahem Hamisa. We're not going to cause their death. However, in other words, the halacha of losaman al dam reyacha doesn't apply in these cases. Bamedvar mamur bi Yisrael baal averus haomed berisho v'shonu bo tamid kigon roim behema daka she pakru begezel v'hem holchim bavlosam avol Yisrael baal averus. She'eno omed berisho tamid ela osa averus lahanoyas atzmon kigon ochel nevel seteyomon mitzvah latzilo v'osur laman al dom. Again, there are a lot of details here, and there's a kesef mishti of significance, but just in terms of just to get the framework here and the general sketch here, what we could say is that the Rambam codifies the sugya in avodah zarah. And minim and apikarsim, we could kill them, we should kill them, or at least if we can't kill them directly, we cause indirectly their death. And the Rambam says that that only applies to Jews. With regard to goyim, we're not going to kill goyim if we're not battling against them. And then the Rambam has a whole shtickel Torah here about roim, about shepherds, behema daka, behema gasa. And then he talks about the fact that a min includes, as we said in the second category, not an idol worshiper, but osa averus, but we have to add lahachis. If he's over averos l'teyavon, then the Rambam says he doesn't fit into the category of a min. That's the Rambam in Hilchos Rotzeach. So just hold on to your comments just for another few minutes. I just want to get a little bit broader of a picture here of what's going on. In Hilchos Gzeila Vaveda, the Rambam again speaks about these two categories of minim and apikarsim. And the question is, do we have to return a lost item to one of the above? Afilu hayabal haveda rasha, the mitzvah of hashavas haveda does not add a word reacha, but hashav teshivim, and that applies even to a rasha. So the fact that this object was lost by a rasha does not exempt me from the mitzvah of hashavas haveda. But then the Rambam says it depends what kind of a rasha. If he's an ochel nevela l'teyavon, then mitzvah la'shiv avidoso. Aval ochel nevela l'hachis, harehu min, v'aminim mi'yisrael v'apikorsim v'yobdei avodazor m'chali shabbos v'hesia osu l'hachsu lehem avedo kigoy. And then the Rambam derives the halacha of avedas goy muteres from the pasuk. Now, here the Rambam adds Mechalei Shabbos b'Farhesia, apparently based on the Gemara in Chulin that equates a Mechal Shabbos b'Farhesia with an Oved Avodah Zarah, and that generates the halacha of Mumris, of being a Min or an Apikoris. And the Rambam says, not only are we exempt from returning a lost item to a min or an apikoros, it's not even permissible. There's no room to go beyond the letter of the law. Lifnimishur sadin also lahachso lahem aveda, and that's the halach of a guy as well. Now, it really doesn't surprise us very much to learn that an ochel nevelus lahachis is someone to whom you don't want to return an aveda, because the Rambam has already decided in Hilchos Rotzeach this is a person that we have to put to death. So it doesn't seem logical that we'd be compassionate and help him out by returning his lost object and saving him some financial loss when we have to put him to death. Obviously, the Rambam is talking about a scenario in which we cannot put him to death, but nevertheless, the Rambam wants to tell us that we cannot return his aveda. Now we get to the question of who is an apikoros, and the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Mamrim, and this perhaps is the most important Rambam that we have to see for today. The Rambam says that there's someone called a Zokei Mamre, and then there's someone who doesn't believe in Torah Shebal Peh. That's not a Zokei Mamre. A Zokei Mamre is a Chacham Gadol who's Roy, he fits to sit on Sanhedrin, but we're talking about someone who denies Torah Shebal Peh. That sounds like a Karoi. And just again, I want to insert, in case I forget to tell you this, my father told me that in his shtetl, where he was born, there was a shul of Karaim. That's what my father told me. They call it in Yiddish the Karimashil. I mean, you know, you and I think Karaim are from who knows when. You know, here in Israel we have the Shomronim, they're dying away, or they're getting deaf, or they're all already deaf. Anyway, so the Rambam writes that somebody who denies Torah Shebal Peh is called a min. And once he's a min, is misaso biad kol adam. Anyone could put him to death. And maybe he should be put to death publicly if you can. Again, nisparsem. The Rambam doesn't say anything about two witnesses coming to testify in front of a bezdin. And the Rambam writes, we know about him, it's public knowledge that he is a denier of Torah Shebal Peh, moridin v'lo malin. He has the same status as a min and an apikoros, which again, very much reflects what we saw earlier in the Rambam. Just give me a minute to get the Rambam out again. Where the Rambam writes that an apikoros is someone who's kofir b'torah. So again, in this case, he's an apikoros because he's kofir b'torah shebal peh. Then the Rambam says that this applies to other categories, not only those who deny Torah min ha-shamayim or Torah shebal peh, it also applies to mosrim, which are Jews who work on behalf of the enemies to give over Jews who might be killed by the government, Vamishumadim, and those who convert to other religions, Kol Elu Einam Bichlal Yisrael. And if we had any doubts about it, the Rambam says, Einam Trichem Lo Edim Velo Asra Velo Dayanim El Kol Ahoreg Echameim Osa Mitzvah Gedola Veheser Michshal. You know, it sounds like the Rambam's on a tirade over. He's on the march. These people have to be put to death. Very strong, harsh language of the Rambam. But here's where the Rambam gets a little softer. And this is really the segue into our sugya for today, that even though there's a mitzvah to kill apikorsim, who are kofrim b'torah, whether it's Torah min ha-shamayim or Torah shebal peh, there's another category which perhaps applies to non-observant Jews today. Says the Rambam, Halacha Gimel, Perek Gimel, Milchus Mamrim, Halacha Gimel, Bamed Dvar Mamurim, Beish, Shekofar, B'Torah Shebal Peh. He deliberately denies Torah Shebal Peh. Mimashavaso, based on his own conclusions, Ubedvarim Shenirim Lo, he comes to, he investigates, V'Holachachar Daito Akala, V'Achashrius Libo, V'Kofar, B'Torah Shebal Peh. Avol b'nei osan hatoim, but the next generation who were brought up on the distorted, deviationist philosophies of their parents, who b'nei b'neim, and how much more so their grandchildren. She'idichu osam avosam, their minds have been poisoned, they've been brainwashed by their parents. V'noldu b'minus, it's not that they came to minus on their own, but gibu osam al-olav, they were brought up and educated, as we said, their minds were brainwashed. Is harein kitinok shenishba bein hagoyim v'gidlu hagoyim al dosam shu onus. We have a case of a baby, a Jewish baby, that was taken captive by the goyim, and he was raised by them on the basis of their religion. This happened during the Holocaust, and probably still goes on today. In such a case, the child was brought up in a monastery or wherever he was born, a Christian family, or perhaps other religions. V'hu anus. You can't say that he became a min on his own. That's what they fed him. The afal pisha shoma achakach. This is the most important line in the Rambam. Shehoya Yehudi. He finds out that he was born a Jew. Not only that, ra ha-yehudim v'dasam. He sees the Jews and how they practice their religion. Nevertheless, Hareu Kohanus. Why? Because all that he saw could not possibly counteract or counter the influence of Sharei Gidlu Al Ta'usam, because he was already brainwashed from his child. Kach Elu Ha'oksim B'darki Avosam Sheto. And therefore we can understand and anticipate that they will follow in the footsteps of their fathers who were mistaken. Lefichach, therefore, instead of killing these children, the second generation of Karayim, Roylach Ziron B'tshuva, we should do the maximum, whatever we can, to bring them back to tshuva. This is the first Kiruv project in the Rambam. V'lim shel chosam v'darchei shalom, we should bring them closer with words of sweetness, of harmony, of peace. Ad sheyachzeru le'esan ha-Torah, till they come back to the strength of the Torah, v'lo yamayir onam lahargon, and be very careful about it. Now take a look for a moment in the Radbaz, if you will, on the right side, Halacha Gimel, and he writes the following. He says, nireh, on the third line, after quoting a source for the Rambam in Masechta Shabbos, shekosav Rabbeinu zeh, that everything that you see here in the Rambam, is l'lamed z'chus al hakaroyim. In other words, the Karoim at the time of the Rambam were worthy of sympathy, so to speak, to try to keep them within the fold until eventually we could be Makari of them. Sezer Adbaz, who again is about 3 centuries after the Rambam, Aval Hanim Tzoyim Bizmanenu, if you talk about our time, says the Radbaz, if we could only get rid of them, mitzvah lo ridon. Sharei b'chol yom anu machzirin osam lemutav. We have done our maximum to bring these karoim back to the fold. Umoshkim osom. And we encourage them. We have empathy. You know, we bring them to the coffee shops and so forth, buying pizza. Lahamim b'torah shebal peh, v'heim mecharfim u'megadfim es balei ha-kabbalah. They deliberately vitiate or say terrible things and chiruf v'giduf against those who are loyal to the tradition of Israel. V'ein lo duno sam es eilu miklal ha'anusim el kofrim b'torah shebal peh. They are outright deliberate Kofrim v'torah shebal. We've done a maximum. We've reached out to the karoim of our time and helped the atat and bunkis, as we say. And bunkis means it's not going to work, although some people want to claim that bunkis does work. So in any event, just to summarize where we're holding at this point, the Rambam in 3 different places, in Hilchas Gzela, in Hilchas Rotzeach, and in Hilchas Mamrim, has codified the halacha that minim and apikarsim, who are either idol worshippers, rishayim lahachis, or deniers of the fundamentals of our belief, these are all Jewish people that don't need edim, they don't need a warning, they don't need judges, just it's a mitzvah to get rid of them. But the Rambam says, this only applies to that first generation of those Jews who decided that they would reject Judaism in favor of being apikorsim. But as far as the children of this generation, and certainly their grandchildren, they have the status of a tinok shenishba. And therefore, since they have the status of a tinok shenishba, he's like an onus, because that's the way they were brainwashed, they were grown up. And therefore, they don't have the din of a mumar. And on the contrary, we should bring him in a karavim and bring him back with compassion and with love. The Radbaz says that that's very nice to be malamid zchus on karoyim, and that's something that the Rambam certainly could do in his time, but already in our time, he says, we did everything and maximized our efforts and it doesn't work. They are still kofrim be'ikar. They go out and do chiruf v'giduf, and therefore, if we only had the ability, we would have to put them to death. Because they fit today into the category of yesteryear of apikarsim and minim.
What's his time period?
Five centuries ago. He was a contemporary of the Beit Yosef, and he lived in Cairo in Egypt, and he had exposure not only to Muslims, but apparently to Christians as well, and plenty of apostates, of Jews who became Christians. And more than that, what was common in his day, and as I told you, it was a fire that raged throughout centuries of Jewish history. He was exposed to the Karoim, and he felt that they had done in his community the maximum that they possibly could with the Rambam's Divrei Shalom and Kiruv. And at the end of the day, the Karoim are Poshet Lahachis, and they deserve to be put to death.
So, I mean, is he arguing with the Rambam, or he's not arguing?
No, he's just saying that the Rambam's limud, the Rambam's limud zchus, and defining and categorizing the karoim of his time as tinoko shenishbu is very appropriate for that period of time, but it would not apply in my time, says Radbaz. In my time, forget it. There's no tinok shenishba here. These karoim are deliberate lahachis. They have been exposed, they've been treated, they've been educated, and they deny Torah Shabbat Peh. But Rabbi Olson, give me just another few minutes, if you can, just to get the picture, and then we'll try to take it apart. Now, in our day today, we can say one or two things that are definite, and I don't think anyone would question it. We have, unfortunately, tragically, Achenu Bnei Yisrael that are not Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. And we're talking about large percentages of the Jewish nation. Every city in the face of the earth is slightly different. In the United States, for example, in most cases, and I was told that the same is true in Vancouver and Canada, the percentages of Jews who are Shomer Torah Mitzvahs are minuscule. And I don't have to tell you about the intermarriage rate. So now, we're going to try to bring these Jews closer to Yiddishkeit, to the belief in the fundamentals of our faith. And there's no question about it. Our program has to consist of, number one, to notify them that there's such a thing called Torah. Number two, to teach them the mitzvahs. Number three, to be personal examples. And number four, to bring them closer with warmth and reach out to them, invite them, create programs for them. This is all that we have to do. However, despite it all, the success rate is not great. And even in the most powerful Kiruv movements, whatever your favorite movement is, I don't know the statistics on Eisha Torah, on NCSY, whatever your, you know, Torah High that they have in Toronto, whatever it is, I don't know how many children from Torah High become Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. I don't know. If you'll tell me 50%, I'll dance in the streets. But I think that would be a little bit of an exaggeration. So what we're faced with is the following problem. Despite all our efforts on reaching out, we're still not successful. And now the question is, what do we do? How does the halacha view these Jews? Can we eat from the shechita? If let's say it's a gadol omed al gavav, so we supervise the shechita. Can we drink from their wine if they touch wine? Because the din of an apikoris and a min is that maga b'yayin is also the yayin that's called stam yenom. What happens if they are called upon to be witnesses at a marriage ceremony? What happens if they cook for us? And that's a shayla bishol akum. Are they considered like goyim? What about a Jew, and this becomes so relevant here in the state of Israel, who violating the Shabbos, Nebuch, puts his life into danger and has an accident, you know, a motorcycle accident, chas v'shalom. And the question is, should we be violating the Shabbos in order to save someone who is an apikoris, who has been part of a kiruv, you know, he's been the subject of all sorts of kiruv, and he refuses to do tshuva? In other words, the real issue is, how do we deal with non-observant Jews who have become aware of their Jewish roots and the Jewish Torah and behavior and mitzvos in the world that surrounds them? I'm not talking about a Jew in Toronto who knows absolutely nothing. And what do we do with these Jews? Do we, for example, count them in a minyan? And that's a question that could really go straight across the board. Would we return a lost object to them? Hashavas Aveda. Let's say, for example, there's a mitzvah, as you know, of Tfilas Kalim. So the poskim are going to decide, well, let's say I buy a kli from a Jew who's Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia. If his din is that of a guy, then I have to be Tovel the kli. Or let's say, for example, we have halacha that a guy sometimes is mevatel the reshus of an eruv. What's the status of a non-religious Jew? And what we want to see here today is basically the following. I want to, if we get a chance in the minutes to come, I would like to check out with you basically three sources. One is to take a look at the mechaber, the tour, and the mechaber Shulchan Aruch. Number two, I want to see the Chazon Ish. And number three, I'd like to see a tshuva of the Binyan Tzion. His name was Erlinger. He lived about 150 years ago, and he's famous for his book called The Aruch Laner. He was a great German scholar, a Jewish scholar. He was also a philosopher, except he had to leave the university because of anti-Semitism 150 years ago in Germany. So let's begin with the following. The Rambam writes that we just saw, and this is the segue to see the Shulchan Aruch, Afal pi sheshoma acher kach shehu Yehudi, even though this Karoy, the Bnei HaKaroyim, he knows that he's a Jew, Roy Yehudim Vidasam, he's been exposed to the Jewish nation and their religion and their observance, nevertheless, since he was brought up Al Ta'usam, he still has the status of an Anus, and he's a Tinok Shenishpa. In other words, the Rambam is not talking, when he speaks about a Tinok Shenishpa, about a Jew that has no exposure whatsoever to Judaism. That is certainly a Tinok Shenishpa. But we're talking about Jews who are brought up in a greater context, in a Jewish community. They know about Torah, they know about what it means to be an observant Jew. What is their status? Says the Rambam, since they were brainwashed from their childhood, they therefore still have the status of a Tinok Shenishba. So it's interesting to me that of all places that you find this discussion about a Tinok Shenishba in Shulchan Aruch, and to me this was a total surprise, it's in Yoredei Siman Kuf Nun Tes, a Siman which most of the Talmidei Chachamim, this is something that you'll find on page 3. Most Talmidei Chacham will spend months on this Siman because it's the laws of Ribbis, one of the most complicated Simanim in Shulchan Aruch. And the question is, you're allowed to lend a guy money with interest. You can't do that to a Jew. What's the status of a min of an apikoros? So the law is, and we'll see this in Shulchan Aruch, nobody questions this, you're allowed to lend an apikoros money with Ribbis because his status is that of a guy. But what about a Tinok Shenishba? What about a non-observant Jew who is raised like a Karoi and brainwashed by his parents? So we're going to take a look now on page 3. Just give me a minute to get this out. And we're going to see that the Beis Yosef addresses this question head on. Are you allowed to lend money with ribis to Karoim? He says the following, again, top right on page 3. Ule'inyan ha-Karoim nirali de la Harambam b'perush masnisin kamaisa dechulin, the first mission in Chulin. The Chashiv Lahu, he considers the Karoim Ketinok Shenishba Ben Agoyim, and therefore Elohim Din Mishubadim. Again, until now we saw this as a Kula, but counterintuitively it becomes a Chumrah with regard to Ribbis. I cannot take Ribbis from him because his status is that of a Jew. Oh. So at this point, if we would end the discussion here, the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef, and later in Shulchan Aruch is going to paskin that for sure you have to be machmir, you cannot lend ribis, money beribis, to a karoi. But then he turns this around and he says, V'afal pi, to lefima shekos of Baal Hanamuki Yosef. Now, Rabosai, I did not find a Namuki Yosef, maybe it's here somewhere, but I think he's referring to the Ramban. And he says, the lo yavinon din tinok shenishba elo lemishalo hikir v'toras Yisrael me'olam. The only person who fits the bill of a tinok shenishba is someone who's never been exposed to the Torah, even in a minimum limited way. Amal misha omeid ben Yisrael, if this Jew was brought up in a community, v'holech u'medabik b'chukosem shel goyim, and he leaves the Jewish community and decides to live like a goy, min amoridim hu, he's a person that should be put to death. Okay, then he gets to another din. He says, efshar dahanach nami din mishumadim yesh lahem. He says it could be that some of these Karoim, who eventually become part of the non-Jewish world, and they were exposed to the Jewish community, they might have a din of mishumadim, even though technically I don't know if they converted, I don't know if they were baptized. But the bottom line is that according to Namuki Yosef, because of his harsh definition of irreligious Jews, he's dafka mekil umutul alvosam beribis. So Abosa, if anybody here makes his money by lending with ribis, I don't think there's anyone, but anyway, if there was, then he would be very excited to applaud to the Muki Yosef, which I say is the Rabban, because now we can be Mekil and consider this Karoi, or this Jew who was brought up in a Jewish community, has completely left the community, he's living like a guy, as a guy, and therefore we can be Malvim Beribis. However, the bottom line is, says the Beis Yosef, Lo Shavkin and Divrei Rambam Hamafuroshim Bishvil Divrei Namuki Yosef. In the toss-up, so to speak, between the Rambam and the Namuki Yosef, we're going to accept the Shita of the Rambam. So again, just to summarize, now, in the light of this Beis Yosef, something very exciting has happened in terms of our study today. We now can shed a light on the question of who is a Tinok Shenishba and who is considered a Min or an Apikoris or even perhaps a Meshumah. According to the Shitas HaRambam, a Jew that was brought up as a non-religious Jew and he was brainwashed as such, even though he knows about the Jewish community, he has some exposure to the Jewish community, he knows about their religion and their observance, he's still considered a Tinok Shenishba. That category, as we described, it is exactly what the Ramban calls a min and an apikoris and moridin also. And it's very fascinating that if you take a look at the Ramban is in Bava Metzia, he speaks about a case called a Ben Mishumedes. That means his mother, who was born Jewish, converted to another religion, and he was born to that Jewish woman, which means his status halachically is that of a Jew. And the question is, can you lend him ribis, or shall we assume that he's a Yisrael? And this question was posed to the Ramban, and he says, Mutala halvoso beribis. We consider him a guy, and you're allowed to charge him ribis. And what I'd like to do for you, for just a moment, is to fast forward to the end of the Ramban. The Ramban says in the last paragraph, he says, V'im nafshach lomar, and I think what he's referring to is the Rambam's argument, Hatenach hamashumad atzmo, the one who converted himself, in this case the mother, but Ben Mishubedis, the son that's born to this apostate mother, is Shogeku. V'havile kikotan shenishba ben agoyim. Says the Ramban, and if you'll raise the argument of the Ramban, and therefore you'll consider and classify this child as a tinok shenishba bat mitzuva lachyoso, lo dami. Dilu hasam, when does the Gemara classify a karoi as a tinok shenishba? Dilo yoda klal, he knows nothing. He has been brainwashed and he's never been exposed to a Jewish community. Aval kan, but here with regard to this Ben Mishumedes, diyada, he knows exactly about the Jewish community, Vishavik Torah Yisrael, and despite that fact, he rejects the Torah of Israel, Midbak Bavodazor, Bechukas Agoyim, he lives like a goy, Hareu Mishumad Gamur, Umaridin Volomail. And when I read this, I'll tell you the honest truth, I thought of something. My father told us, it was like a tzava, that we can give any name, he was very in favor of Tanakh names, to any of our children, except for one name, the name Noach. Because his first cousin Noach left the shtetl in Plisa, in Lita, went to settle in Switzerland, married a Goyita, was living as a Christian, and get this, guys, he was writing letters to my father's grandfather, which was also his grandfather, in Lashon Kodesh, with Shtiklach Torah, to try to make my great-grandfather believe that he was living as a Jew. And he was a Meshumad. And my father said, don't give the name Noach. Interesting. Now, I don't know if there's any Noach in my family, but... Now, Rabosai, what I want you to take a look at for a moment is the head of the Beis Din in Bnei Brak, Rab Nissen Karelitz, who you've all heard of, in the Chut Shani, which is on the bottom of your page, page 3. Now, the Chut Shani is based largely on the Binyan Tzion, which is on the top of page 4. The Binyan Tzion was asked this question 150 years ago in Germany about the relationship that halacha would have with those Jews who are poshei Yisrael, but that's the way they were brought up in Germany. And again, there's a long piece here in the Binyan Tzion. You may notice a double underline on the on the left side on the top, and that's the punchline. And he says the following: Avol poshe Yisrael bismanenu, irreligious Jews in our time, lo yadana ma odon behem. I don't know how to judge them. This is 150 years ago. He's confused as to how to classify irreligious Jews. And he says that irreligious Jews today do not have the same status as Karoim, because Karoim are those who outright deny Torah Shebaal Peh. Here, what you're talking about is not Karoim, who live a life as Jews and convince themselves that they're Jews and they have the right formula for being Jews. They deny the fundamentals of our religion. For example, and this I never knew before until I saw this Binyan Tzion, the Karoim have Mila but without Priya. Interesting. Because Priya already belongs to Torah Shebaal Peh, of course, Malvolo Parki Loma. But they don't care about that. And not only that, they don't have Gittin and Kiddushin. Again, I plead the fifth. I never knew that. Because the Torah says, V'lokach ish isha, and Torah Shebaal Peh is going to tell you how you get married, the Kesef Shtar Bia. And they didn't have that. And the Torah says that you give a get. So for Karoi, you know, you maybe you write a little line or so and you throw it, but all the Dinim of Gittin with all our Lachas of Lishma and to Edim and the Edim Asirikar, say to Chassid, that they don't have. That's all Torah Shebaal Peh. He says that the Poshim in our time, those who are irreligious, lo partsu b'dvar ma'elu. He says they weren't prutzim. They had gittin and they had kiddushin, then they went to the Jewish bezdin. They had mila with priya, and therefore, he says the following: you want to know what's the status of wine that was touched by an irreligious Jew in Germany in the year 1830? He says, Nir l'nias daiti hamachmir lahachshiv negias yayin shel haposhim halalu kistam yenam is tovel avroch. If you have the ability to be machmir and consider wine that was touched by an irreligious Jew to be stam yenam, so be blessed, zeigemenscht. Achen, however, gam lamakilim yesh lev al mayismuchu. Those who want to say that irreligious Jews are still Jews, that's fine. Im lo, except for the following category. Shemevurar lanu, that is clear to us. Sheyodim dine Shabbos. Umeizim paneem lechallo bifnei asar miyisrael biyachad. They know about Hilchos Shabbos. They've been exposed, they've been educated, but they flagrantly, publicly violate the Shabbos. Zevadai kemumer gomor unegias yeno osur. So again, Rabbosai, we don't know what's the status of non-observant Jews today. Many of them, I would say 99% of them, are probably mechal Shabbos befarhesia. There are, and that's how I was brought up, Jews who are not Shomer Shabbos in the technical sense, but they would never dream of violating the Shabbos publicly. I remember walking with my father from shul with Ploni Almodi, and he would not do anything to violate the Shabbos. But when we passed a group of Yardim, who were living as Goyim, basically, they would mow the lawn on Yom Kippur as my father would walk by, knowing full well that he was the rabbi of the community. So, you know, when you want to decide who exactly fits the bill of being a mumar, there are different categories, and that's what I think the Binyan Tzion is pointing out. And Achiezer, who's Reb Chaim Ozer Grzinski, the greatest posik of Litta in his time 100 years ago, he relies on the Binyan Tzion for Makom Igud, which means, let's say for example, the two brothers, one brother dies childless, leaves a wife. If his brother is a Machal Shabbos Befarhesia, then we're going to allow him to perform Chalitza. Why? Because he has the barest respect for observing the law. And that's enough, b'makom igun, to rely on the Binyan Tzion, who says, gam al mikilim yesh al milismachu. Not only that, Rabbi Chaim Ozer even goes a step further. He wants to say that these edim of Mechalei Shabbos b'farhesia, if they sign on a get, the get is kosher, and we're going to rely on the Binyan Tzion. And if you go back for a moment to the previous page, where we saw Rav Nissen Karelitz, who writes that with regard to a tinok shenishba umumar hanire, which you see on the left column, the be'emes lo pligi harambam varamban de kuli alma hakaroim dino kitinok shenishba. He says that a karoi definitely has the status of a tinok shenishba, and even the Ramban would agree to that. Kevin Shem Svurim, because they're convinced that Hanagoseim he derech haTorah amitis. They were trained and raised to believe that this is the correct Torah. That's what they accepted from their fathers. They know, of course, that there are other Jews who have a different religion, but that's a different religion. They have a different Torah than we have. This is our Torah. Ra ra ra. We believe in our Torah. And therefore, somchen al mashekibu me'avoseim, and they believe that this is the true Yiddishkeit. In such a case, you cannot call them a mumar. That's a tinuk shenishba, and even the Ramban would agree. Ah, but he says, ben hamumeres, the case where the Ramban is addressing, she odeya shehu Yehudi, he knows he was born Jewish, he knows he was born into the religion the way we observe the religion, our tradition, he's not the son of a karoi. The odeya shekol ha-yehudim no'agim b'das ha-yehudim, is Bazeh, here's where the Ramban says, Kevin Sheodea Kolzos, Vieno Rotza Linog Bidas HaTorah HaReu Mumar, Vieno Tinok Shenishpa. Ubazeh Yode Gama Ramba. The Ramban would also agree. He's not being trained and being educated from his birth that there's a different kind of true religion of Yiddishkeit. No. This is a guy who knows exactly what Yiddishkeit is all about, and yet he's not interested in Das Yehudis. Such a person, even the Rambam would agree, has the status of a Tinok Shenishba, and therefore you're not allowed to be Malva Ribbis. And now we come to the punchline of today's Shir. And this is on page 5, and that's the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says the following. He speaks about the category we describe here in Israel as Chilonim. I'm sure you've all heard of that, you know, the secularist Jew. And the Chazon Ish claims that anyone who's called a Chiloni today in the state of Israel should be assumed and classified as a Tinok Shenishba. And he says the following. The Rambam says that we have to try to reach out to a Tinok Shenishba and educate him. At what point can we say we did enough? We did all the Hishtadlus, and yet he decides that he wants to remain firm as a Chiloni Jew. At what point do we say that he's amazed? He is a Mumar. Says the Chazon Ish, Shiur Haishtadlus, the measurement, you know, what constitutes a sufficient amount of Hishtadlus that we gave him enough exposure, enough education, Tolui Lefi Hisbonus Hadayon. Now, some would say that the Chazon Ish was thinking out, gave the easy way out. But basically, I think what the Chazon Ish says is that you have to be a member of Sanhedrin Agdolah to decide the status of this Jew. It's mamish dinei nefashos. It's like a capital case. Kasher yofiu b'ruach kodesham. We need dayanim who are on the level of ruach hakodesh be'achroas dino. You know, this reminds me a lot of the Binyan Tzion 100 years earlier when he said, "Eni odeh lachriya." I just simply don't know. Umash nechleku achronim zal bitzdukim. He means the karoim bidoras achronim ichashivi kadnusim hainu bachroas shir hayidia. The whole machlokus about the status of karoim in previous generations, that controversy is really about this particular point: shir hayidia. How much do we have to assume they know these karoim until they can finally be considered mezid? Sheyodim imitzias Yisrael v'sheiv sheavoseim pirshu mehem. They realize that it's their parents, their grandparents, their earlier generations that went off to derech and rejected Judaism. Idaynina luhu kashir yedia. If the dayana will say that these individuals, we'll call them Reuven, Shimon, or Levi, had enough exposure, enough teaching, enough education, lemechshav lemezid, that now they decided they don't want to join the religion and observe it because they are mezidim, olo. Well, the Dayanim have to say no. Akati anusim hen. To counter the impact, the poisonous impact of an irreligious education from birth, we haven't done enough. This guy is still an onus. Ube'emes, says the Chazon Ish, tzarech ladun al kol ish ve'ish befrat. We need to get together a bezdin of ayin aleph's kedim for every single Jew to make this decision, to make this call. Now that's on the right side of your page. If you take a look on the left side of your page, the Chazon Ish writes in Yoredeya, again this is in the very beginning of Yoredeya, Hilchos Shechita of course, he writes, Ein Moridin, as far as the law of Moridin is concerned, that we should put someone to death because he's such an apikoros and a kofer, that law of Moridin only applies bisman shashgochas Hashem yisbar gluya, when the divine supervision over the world, the providence, is exposed, is clear as day. The us haya kiur harishayim gidro shel olam. Then, at that point, when God, in that historical period, when God was revealed, then the Rishayim were clearly disgusting. Kiur means repulsive. Amo bizman ha-helem, we live in a time where the Yad Hashem is concealed, and therefore our emunah is not strong. Is aim b'maisel rada geder ha-pirtzel tosefet ha-pirtz. He says, the purpose of putting to death a person who broke away and deviated from our religion is to strengthen our religion. In our case, in our context, adarab, the exact opposite effect would be achieved. Instead of creating a geder for a pirtza and closing up a hole, it's going to be a tosefes pirtza. Why? Because it's going to be a terrible situation. Beineim kemaisa. Hashchas of Alimus, it's like we are a bunch of killers, and therefore Leinu Lachziram Bavosas Ava, what we have to do for all the Rishonim in our time when there's no Gilui Shechina is to reach out to them with Ava Ulamidam Bekeren Ora Bima Sheyodenu Magas. So just to summarize, again, we didn't finish, but we'll have to stop here, I guess. Two major points in the Chazon Ish. Number one, the Chazon Ish says that in order to judge any situation, has this fellow been taught, been educated, been exposed to religion, and yet he rejected it, therefore he's no longer an honest, he's a bezid. For that, says the Chazon Ish, you would need a bezdin of dayanim, of ruach hakodesh, that would judge every single individual. Imagine, you know, I think they talk about 6 million Jews here in Israel. I'm not sure exactly what the population of Jews is here. Imagine if chas v'sholem, I don't know, I don't want to be motzi laz, but let's say 5 out of 6 million Jews here are non-observant. I'm probably exaggerating, but whatever the number is, take 5 million Jews, line them up single file, bring each one in front of a bezdin, for that bezdin to determine whether or not he's an anus or a bezdin. We would be here long, long after the Mashiach comes. And the second point of the Chazon Ish, which I think is equally important, is to realize that we live in a time where the challenge for a Chiloni Jew to become religious is an immense, enormous challenge. It's not like the Karoim back in the day when, you know, the Jewish religion was, and divine providence was clear and exposed. Today we live in a period of Helem and Hester Panim, so we can't expect that every Jew is going to come to Emunah when he was trained with the toxic poison from his youth, and he was nursed on the belief in Chiloniyut, Chas v'Shalom, that there's no Torah. Those are the two major points here, which I think form the, in a sense, the epitome, or the, you know, the objective or the goal of our shiur for today.
So, Rabbi, given that the chances are slim to be Mekarev Otam, and the Chazon Ish understanding, it looks to me like it's questionable whether one should engage in kiruv.
Dan, let me just
So I was saying that at the minimum, then Esha Torah and everybody should teach this lesson in the beginning to give them a heads up. You should know you are starting now to learn, but you should know that in the end.
So Dan, if you would give me 2 minutes, let me just formulate your question. Again, I don't know if you have to run, you have to run. There are two possibilities here. One possibility is to say, you know what, we're going to expose them to Yiddishkeit through this Kiruv project, and at the end, good chances that they'll reject Yiddishkeit b'chol zot, and now what have we done for them? Instead of there being anus, they became mazim. The other possibility is to say the following. Mimanafshach. If we don't succeed, it means we didn't give them enough to counterbalance against all their education. They still remember on us. And the stakes are high here because if we do succeed, then we've made them into Furbiyin. So I think what the Chazon Ish, I'm just guessing, if he were alive today and he would hear your question, I think he would say the following. Don't be worried about the fact that you may not succeed and you're going to convert this guy from an onus into a mazit. That should not be your attitude. If he remains a mazid and a chiloni, that's not your fault, and he's still an onus. He's still a tinok shenish, but the poison in his system is so profound that it's difficult, it's beyond help. But on the other hand, if you succeed, that's going to be great. And I think that's the philosophy that underlies all the Kiruv projects today. We're not going to say, well, maybe we'll make him into a mazid, and as a result, he's going to be a mumar, lahachis and b'mazid. No, let's take the more positive and more optimistic approach. If we don't succeed in counterbalancing, you know what? Maybe we don't have the educators and the inspiring people that we need to inspire him. He's still an onus. He's got years and years of chilonism in him. But if we succeed, and that's what we're hoping we can, it's going to be an amazing thing. And you know what, Dan? I think we have no choice in the matter. Because the numbers today are just so terrible that we can't even make a rational decision. We are in a desperate situation. We have to involve ourselves and dedicate ourselves to Kiruv.
I would be the last one to advocate against the Kiruv movements. I'm a product of Esha Torah myself.
Right.
At age 40.
Right.
What I'm saying is that they should give them a warning at some point in the beginning and say, look, by now you got a flavor, and we have to warn you that if you know in your mind that you will never come to our side, doesn't matter what, then maybe you shouldn't continue.
I don't agree with you. Even though, Dan, you know, I hear what you're saying. I personally don't agree with you. I don't want to rock the boat. Whatever I can get from this guy and schlep him in, he may be an outright advocate of secularism and a rejecter of Torah. And he's not even going to consider, when you approach him, even a 1% chance that he'll ever accept your primitive religion. But nevertheless, I've seen cases, and you've seen cases, that Kiruv was successful. A lot of these people who are anti and are total rejectors have within them, there are all sorts of factors, fears. It's not all intellectual, by the way. It's not all because they're outright atheists or they know, you know, intellectually that the Torah can't be true. A lot of that is just layers and layers of fear because, look, the stakes are higher because if they become from a Yidden, Chas v'Sholom, imagine what that means. They have to change their whole lifestyle. And imagine if a man is married out of the faith. You know, obviously he's got to get rid of his wife. But it goes on and on and on. You know, that's where they're fighting it. In fact, I think I once mentioned to you that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman says that the reason why we're not succeeding in Kiruv is because of the pasuk Lo Tikach Shochat. The whole world and the whole life, especially in our hedonistic, pleasure-filled world, is all shochat. So obviously, you know, we're fighting against very, very difficult odds. But we don't have a choice. And
yes,
we can't throw it.
We also have a temptation to keep the Kirov organization going, even in those cases where we know that's nothing going to happen.
Why is that?
We know. Because we want the organization. You know, we have jobs in this organization. So we, you know, we keep on doing what we're doing also.
I mean,
from my experience, what I saw, it's either people click somewhere in the beginning or they never do.
Oh.
It's not such a gradual process. It's a click.
It's an either or right away. It's like you remind me what they say about shidduchim. You know that he or she decides already in the first date or two. You know. You know what, Dan? I think you have a lot more experience in this than I do. But I just want to clarify what you meant when you said to keep the organization going. Is that because we have to put food on the tables of X number of people who are working in the organizations? We have to just make sure we support their families? That's what you mean?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hate to think that that's, you know, the money...
Yeah, it goes. It keeps on going from itself at some point also.
No, but I'm saying, Dan, you know, emotionally, I hate to think that we're raising money for great organizations just simply so they can, you know, support their families. Maybe why don't I take that money that I'm raising and just give it as stucco if these people are such losers that they can't find jobs, you know?
It's impossible, like in everything else, to generalize, but there is always a nucleus or a part, usually smaller, that's enthusiastic as in the first day and, you know, completely honest, right?
Right.
But as the organization grows, there will be a lot of inertia also.
Okay. I'm wondering where we are today, meaning I think the Kirov movement... It's complicated because the numbers, I think, maybe are smaller, but yet I think the potential is incredible. I'm very curious, fascinated about a program that's called Taglit. What do they call it in English?
Taglit is a birthright.
Birthright. Because, yeah. You know, I was recently at the Kotel on a Friday night. I'm telling you, Dan, I must have seen Billy Guzma. As I'm walking back from the Kotel, I must have seen at least 250, if not twice that amount. Now, I don't know what percentage of them are halakhically Jewish, that I don't know. You know, I think Michael Steinhardt could care less. But this is not a Kirov project. But it does increase at least the statistical probability that they might marry within the faith. That maybe some of these Jews will marry Jews. And in certain cases, they get attached to the land of Israel. They want to come back a second time. I look at these kids, and I saw them. And I said to myself, this is an unbelievable Kirov possibility. I don't know how to get to them. I don't know if anyone is getting to them, but...
I came from zero. Mamash from zero. Mm-hmm. Negative, actually.
Where was that, in Romania?
Yeah, I knew Ephes, but I look here, most of the people, they come from conservative families, they do know some things here and there, and their main thing is to get some more classes.
Right, but let me ask you this, Dan.
It can go on for years and years and years, and they never switch, never click.
So let me ask you this, maybe I'm anticipating your answer to this question, but where is there a greater probability of success in Kyiv? With someone who comes from Efes or some of these kids that have this background and they know a little bit about you?
I think from Efes.
From Efes. Because you're not complacent. It's either you jump in or you don't.
They hear another story that they add to their collection, that a few things they do know.
Yeah. I hear.
Okay, so they add another one. But never forces them to think, is this true or not? Nice. What am I doing here?
Okay, let me wish everybody we should have success and we should see Bias Goel and the light of Torah should be spreading. B'mehir v'yameinu.
Amen.
Amen. Okay, it's good. Thank